Blog Talk Radio.
Served in small doses. This is for those of you who are too much idle time on your hands, or you just like the level of discussion and topics that go on through the airwaves out to you. It's sort of a foot in both camps. It's modern as hell, and yet I just love the romantic notion of connecting and talking and communicating by radio. So welcome, and thank you for tuning us in. And I want you to know, South Korea, we have not forgotten you. No, certainly not. And to our listeners in France, it's always a pleasure to have you join us. And never too sure about Brazil taking time from the challenges that it faces. It's quite an honor to think that we can contribute somehow to, I can contribute somehow to a moment of reflection for you. This is where you do want to, you'll be encouraged here to take time when you are reading material instead of zipping through it. As a student does, you know, when you're there and you're faced with reading four or five books or many chapters in a night before you can tuck yourself in, you have to digest. You just have to learn how to pick up the key points. Digestion, that comes later. So here, I like to think that you can be the student, but also take the time to contemplate, look and search out the meaning and how it applies to you. Today I'm going to try and do a couple of things. I'm going to try and convince you that we should change the name of Masonry. All right, yeah, well, oh, as I say that, the dark clouds are forming over those lightning bolts. Let me explain. I think, would it be easier if we tried to deal directly with what we are about? We're about this brotherhood, aren't we? Yeah. And more than that, we're about a legacy. It's not a bureaucracy. It's not constitution. That's part of it. It's not the emphasis on the brand, you know, Grand Lodge. It's not enough. It's more than that. The idea here in law, legacy is something acquired by inheritance, but it's also the story of somebody's life, the things they did, the places they went, goals they accomplished. It's something that a person leaves behind to be remembered. We've been handed a legacy, and we didn't exactly know, eyes wide open, what was in the envelope before we opened it. And so it is for us a process of discovery, but it's, I think, a bit daunting to realize that when we realize the scope, just the enormity of what we've what we've finally discovered. Now, for those of us who is there such a thing as a Masonic birthright? I don't know. Maybe we could say every man has a Masonic birthright, every person, in some way, shape, or form. But a legacy should be deeply considered. It takes on immortality, and it's how we live on after death. It's particularly if we think that the profound legacy that we've been handed on is in part the measure that the standard, I guess, that we should consider and keep in mind for the generations coming forward. And here, where I am, I think it's, we're struggling. There's a great weight on our chest, and we're having difficulty taking that great, confident, deep breath. We should, there's a few triggers and nice, pleasant reminders going on around us, and I'll want you to sit back and feel and consider for a moment the connections that we bring forward. And here we're going to make an effort to help you to connect and feel part of the brotherhood. I believe here today what we achieve is a brotherhood within a state of mind. In order for us to move forward here, I'm in a jurisdiction that is struggling with a question. And without the question, we can't find the solution. I'm going to pull that back. The question has more to do about longevity and moving forward into the future. And having a sense of whether there is relevance and interest in Freemasonry today, we don't really know. I suspect that this has been a question that's been tossed around over the different generations of Masonry over the past 500 years, 600 years, in its various forms and precincts. But I don't think that I think we have advantages and tools that we would be, would make our ancient brethren wonder if they saw how clumsy we are about applying them. Of course you would use a good tool. Of course you would use a better tool. Now, here's a question for you, and it's a bit rhetorical, I guess. Do you think that it's important to speak the truth for the sake of the brotherhood, for the sake of our fraternal order? Is it necessary in order for us to use those pillars that we have been taught to be as truthful as we possibly can with ourselves and with our brethren, and to contribute in a meaningful way? Now, this question in itself suggests that there is not a clamor for everybody to be in charge. Have we failed so miserably that you are coming away from Masonry with the notion that everything is about being in charge and being the center of attention? Where have we failed you? How have we failed you? If anything, it's the confidence. To be able to pay attention. It's the intellect to be able to observe. So here, it's unlike being in the marketplace. This is where you do things differently, and aspects of our mind and our emotion or control of ourselves are expected. Not that we have mastered them, but we need to at least know what they are. And good mentorship teaches us that if we see you as the apprentice struggling, we need to be able to not tell you what to do, but help you to discover it within yourself. I think this is what we've wanted when we're feeling that sense of closeness. It's really what comes from trust, and trust comes when we start talking to one another and making sense. So if we're going to move forward, Paria, I think the Greeks called it, Paria, it's important that we use manners. These muscular conversations are just so bloody tedious. If that's all we have to promote our idea is the use of some kind of, if this is rhetoric where I have to, is this the dialectic or the rhetoric here? Am I and you geared to persuasion? So you convince me that your position is correct. Well, really. So we have a right and wrong. 50% of the time we're right, 50% of the time we're wrong. What if that's a problem? We no longer teach rhetoric in our school system. What if the dialectic where each person, you, give your ideas, you explain them fully, and you explain them in the face of questioning. And I do the same. And the next fellow does the same, and the next, and the next. And then we each reason out for ourselves what the appropriate decision should be. Now, if we're only caught up in that narcissism, if we're only looking at our reflection in the surface of the pond, the isolation of that will isolate you. Because people will, I'll be very blunt. People will be kind to your face, polite to you because they don't want to put up with another temper tantrum or silly old man or some type of ill-mannered comment. They'll turn you off. Our children learn how to do this at a very early age, by the age of about 3 or 4, maybe a little younger than that. They learn how to do this. Smile, the parent goes away. And then continue to have your own thoughts. Oh, we did the experiment when we thought we could beat the right thought into children. And we know where that went. It was pretty much a train wreck. Now we want to hear. Now we want to know. And, oh, it may be uncomfortable because it's much easier to shut them up and just beat the hell out of somebody than it is to weigh the merit of what they have to say, to actually hear them, to listen. Oh, it becomes complicated because we extend a responsibility to the individual and a responsibility to ourselves. And the result that we understand human nature to a greater degree, well, you did take the obligation. Don't be coming and faulting me. Don't come and fault me. But it's time, folks, to tune the piano. It's time. We've been banging away at this one for a long, long time. And let's be a little more generous with ourselves, shall we? Brotherhood. We can move forward. We can handle the challenges around us. That legacy, how do we preserve it? Is it reenactment? Well, is it a legacy because we are studying principles and ethics, and we can examine where they came from and how they came from and the application of great people, thinking that the great people, great minds, have something to teach us. Just like the simple metaphor for me is the musician. So I go and listen to the finest violinist in the world, whoever that might be. If I want to learn the violin, I can do it. Yes, you can. Oh, geez. You can always do it yourself. But I'm not talking about the ego drive. Get some control over your id there. I'm talking about that sound, that quality, that nuance, that conversation that comes from music to us. The stuff that made the Pythagoreans wonder, that magic that came, you know, that feeling of magic that came. You imagine when we saw a tradesman able to calculate accurately the corner angles of a building before, just when it had never been done before. Well, can you imagine? That's magic. That's mathematics. Oh, there's so much we can go off on that, and we should, to talk about what's happened to the East, what's happened to the genius of the Middle East, what it contributed so much to our being and to our function, and now what? We're caught up in what, this religiosity, this, you know, these tensions of predominance of what? The hell are we trying to dominate? Thought? To struggle for correctness? Really? We've reached that level of arrogance? Our faith makes us stronger. We don't need to kill somebody to prove that we're right. In fact, that's a failing. Anyway, set that aside. Today is the day you think about these things. Just some context. This is the day in 1666 when a bakery owned by a guy named Tom Ferrier began to burn. That bakery was in London. And before it was over, 93 churches were gone and 1,400 houses burned. And the winds came from the east and just fanned that fire. This is in a city that had been built without the consideration of the conflagration, the potential for a great fire. So they disappeared and burned for 4 days. A tragedy. Think about how many people ran before the flames. Do any of you suggest that we fault Tom Ferrier? There was always fires in bakeries. Always. Because you had to rake out the coals and put them on the floor, and often bakers would be severely burned. You had to have an oven to cook them, you know, let's consider it. So do we fault bakers? Always blame, huh? Always blame. Now step back a bit and realize that what burned down was rebuilt, with a bit of a plan and a better understanding of risk. I like to think it's the part of the opportunity that Christopher Wren was brought into, created his masterpiece, St. Paul's Cathedral on Ludgate Hill. Oh, the fire was in 1666, but the cathedral, that was finished in 1710. Now, do you think, interesting, isn't it, Graham? Yeah, all very fine and well. So what? Well, do you think that kind of event had an impact on the brethren that were creating and forming the idea of a collective, of a fraternal order of Masons? Do you think? Did the plague not do it? Do you think that had a bearing as well? And you see my point? You come to terms with looking at the Creator and trying to understand the Creator, and oh my, the challenges to the authority of the church and state were being modified. They were moving sideways. And good, thoughtful, bright people were moving into areas referred to by the authorities as the occult. An attempt, for example, the best example for me would be alchemy. An attempt to understand truth. To understand the Godhead, what that relationship is and how, whether it does it exist? If it does, what's the form? And is the study in some way transformative? We have a good show today, but we have incredible material to work with. The commentary I get to, we have some good music for you. Function over form, our time as measurement. Oh yeah, we do. We do have purpose. And we'll talk about the ebb and flow of the order here. This is from Joan Chamorro. I've been fascinated with her for a little while. You'll like this, I think. Spanish players, audacious. Check it out. And fill up your cup with whatever you're sipping. You're going to need it. Share a bit of the commentary. Think of yourself in some meaningful and productive way. I've been thinking about this because the poet that I've chosen for today is a Canadian fellow, Leonard Cohen. He's no longer with us, but his poetry is. And I came across, I was led to him through a line that he worked on. He would spend weeks choosing the and thinking about the right word to fit in. Can you imagine that somebody would offer us the courtesy of spending that much time? It's like when you're with somebody that's trying to understand, truly understand what you're saying and how you're saying it. And for many, these superficial minds, it's off-putting. For people that are lacking confidence, it's penetrating. We want people to know. I can walk around as if I'm a secret, but all of our behavior and our manner reveals our true nature. So this is what I stumbled across. There is a crack in everything. That is how the light gets in. There's a crack in everything. It's like saying that we believe that our setbacks have a larger meaning and purpose. A generous reminder that we aim for a revelation in the heart rather than a confrontation or a call to arms or defense. What goes through them? What's the experience of the old soldier? I'm not talking about the zealot. Not at all. I'm talking about the old soldier. When the noise of the battlefield is a memory. And then we hear and see soldiers wrestling with that today. But if we're thinking that we have to arm ourselves and go out and continue the battle, and that's the solution, winning is the solution, how come it's not working? It's not working because it's not the source of the solution, because the problem that we're talking about has something to do with our heart, something to do with our mind. So the light, that's how the light gets in. Cracks, just when you think you've got it all. And each one of us, we are maturing, we're getting a little old. King Lear, how old art thou? Not so young, sir, to love a woman for singing, nor so old to dote on her for anything. I have years on my back, 48. Here, Shakespeare was getting at this. I'm not that young that I get infatuated with a woman for some pretty feature like her nice voice. And I'm not that old that I start getting all mushy and sentimental about any random thing. I'm 48. Can you imagine? I think Shakespeare would be an interesting entered apprentice. Yeah. Here's the commentary for today, though, just to set a bit of mood. Function over form. Now, keep in mind the question to you, and I'm asking you if it's valid to say that our brotherhood, our fraternal order, is also a state of mind, state of the heart, maybe. Time does matter. In 1998, Stephen Hawking wrote an essay for Prospect magazine on the 10th anniversary of his book, A Brief History of Time. I think I still have mine around here somewhere. He explained the idea came from lectures he gave at Harvard in 1982. In 1984, he had a first draft. I told my literary agent that I wanted my book on airport bookstalls. The agent made polite noises, but clearly didn't think it was possible. Hawking picked publisher Bantam Books, which assigned an editor, Peter Guzzardi, who made me rewrite my first draft in terms that he could understand, and then changed the title from the Big Bang to Black Holes to A Short History of Time to A Brief History of Time. people had always wanted answers to the big questions. Where do we come from? How did the world begin? What is the meaning and design behind it all? Scriptural explains on creation had seemed less credible. Superstition offered far-fetched answers. And many people felt the real science was too difficult for them. Hawking took up the challenge. Not everyone can be or wants to be a theoretical physicist, but most people can understand the basic ideas if they are presented clearly without equations. It was a difficult read for me, but it did leave a flavor. It does not matter too much if people can't follow all the arguments. They can still get the flavor of the intellectual quest to understand the universe on the basis of rational laws. Though we don't understand time, we measure it. And Freemasonry is an enduring sensate entity that humanity uses to measure time and progress. In New Zealand, the giant kauri tree, 2,500 years old, is being threatened by disease. Consider how our continuous history, uneven, without valence, unenforceable self-development, based on endurable but ancient ethics. Us. The fact that we exist and exist in a continued form helps people to define time. They may think we're not important today. Well, not everything is important every single moment. It's like sitting near a computer and somebody throwing ideas at us as if we need somebody to tell us what thoughts we should have in our head. Oh, we do this repeatedly in Masonry, and it just staggers the mind, literally. No pun intended. Well, maybe pun intended. It's like somebody taking pictures of what they're eating and sending it to me. I don't need to know. Don't embarrass yourself. But the fact is, they're testing a process. They can do it for the very first time. So there's cracks in that approach. We learn from those cracks. The light shines in. So we're evolving, even though things are destabilizing because of the rapidity of change going on around us in so many different spheres at the same time. Only the interesting part is we're more aware. Oh, all right, put your hands over your head right now. Put down your glass of gin and your Merlot and your, if you're like, you've got a nice French roast going like I have, just put it down, or your glass of water. Put your hands over your head and shake them. It's called jazz hands. The sky is falling. There's so much change going on. Put your hands in the air. Every time you feel that, jazz hands, sky is falling. Oh, whatever will be will, of me. Or we sit back as true Masons and watch. What in the hell is going on? And what is this effect? You know your own mind. That's how you know your own. It's when you begin to realize those thoughts that aren't inserted into your mind by other people. So you may feel like you're a bit of a laggard simply because you hadn't thought about it. Well, it's not called stupidity. It's called curiosity. That'd be like saying, well, when Hawking got it right, he was a stupid man. Well, yeah, okay, he didn't win the Nobel Prize for his theory of the singularity, okay, but he did win. I'll leave it to you to go and search out what they gave him the award for, and what did he make a contribution? Here's Ron Carter. The shadow of your smile. This is beautiful. Thank you. Ron Carter. He's excellent double bassist. He's a true talent and gift. That's called The Shadow of Your Smile. Yeah. Now, the poem that really caught my attention, and I will admit and confess, I'm so drawn to the Russian poets these days. More. And my bucket list is becoming shorter because I finally, it's not enough to have the book on the shelf. I have to understand the damn thing. I have to understand it. So Tolstoy's book has always escaped me, War and Peace. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. But I think it has something to do with the compelling information and the way that it expresses important aspects of life. If you want to know how I think the Masonic mind develops, it's through the culture. It's through the effort, through the exposure to brilliance, not the meager. It's exposure to beauty. Now, in your world around you, what's beautiful? Oh, there, jazz hands again. I'm a male. Don't talk to me about things beautiful. Get over yourself, boy. Get over yourself. This is for adults. There are beautiful things in the world. There's some of the gestures that you do for your friends, the way you stand up for somebody that's being persecuted when all others are dumping on them. You have their back. Oh, that's an uncommon feature so often these days, and it takes Masons to demonstrate it. Not that it's going to be popular, and you will be a target of ridicule, I can tell you that. That's truth to power, when you're willing and capable of standing up and facing the back pressure that's going to occur. Jazz hands, throw them up in the air. This comes from Leonard Cohen. It's entitled, There Are Some Men. It comes from his work, The Spice Box of Earth. That was published in 1961. There are some men who should have mountains to bear their names to time. Grave markers are not high enough or green, and sons go far away to lose the fist their father's hand will always seem. I had a friend. He lived and died in mighty silence and with dignity, left no book, son or lover to mourn. Nor is this a mourning song, but only a naming of this mountain on which I walk, fragrant, dark, and softly white, under the pale of mist. I name this mountain after him. They're calling. Boy born in 1934. Careful observer, raconteur, rascal, yeah. Lock up your women and children, you know. He was a writer, gentle soul. We have much to do with the exposure of us to great and important and enduring things. I can't make an excuse. Why the popular tune of the moment doesn't have longevity. I can't explain that other than it's probably boring. It's just like opening a very thick book, but the pages don't really have much on them. I'm trying to explain, like, why do I, you know, I was introduced to some people from visiting here from Germany not too long ago, and why did I mention that they came from the land of Beethoven? Why? That I don't like that techno pop crap that was coming out in the 70s and 80s. But it's enduring. And now it crosses social barriers. And once it was elitist. And once it was the work of the audacious that had never been done before. And so great minds apply themselves. What do you apply yourself to today? If you're looking for that challenge that it hasn't been done before, well, is it for you to live a good life? Everything going so well in your background? Oh, you want to dismiss this. Don't look here. Look over there. Well, great things have been happening to us, and we don't always know at the time that they're going to have some longevity. So what does the past teach us if we're able to look at it unvarnished, not shape-shifted or spun to serve some purpose, but to take it for what it is? The first sharing of music and theater. Oh, today we can spend a few hundred dollars and go to a concert or theater. Or we can listen to somebody with a guitar around a campfire. But the enduring, the embellishment of all that effort, opera. Oh, we have to hate that. Oh, we can't like that. We've not done that before. Hmm. So I better not taste that. I've never tasted it before. I probably won't like it. Masonry is the challenge. The intelligent man. The thoughtful man. Not the braggart. Not the one that has to chatter on as if he's in love with the sound of his own voice. Oh, my goodness. Here's somebody that I don't know ever achieved that point of being in love with his own voice. You'll know him. This is called A Kiss to Build a Dream On. Hmm.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on. When I'm alone with my fancies, I'll be with you, weaving romances, making believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Give me what you alone can give, a kiss the girl that you want. Thank you.
Christian orthodoxy on us. In some places in the world, I've heard, they're zealots, and some people are raised and encouraged to think of religion in terms of intolerance for anything but what they consider orthodoxy. And then we have this other strange group of people that strive for a comparative understanding. What can the Mohammedans, if you want to recall, teach us? What can we learn from Christianity? What can we learn from the Hindi and the Buddhist? What can we be taught? Not that any one would necessarily be dominant. And if I'm a Jewish boy and I'm struggling to understand the angels, what does that teach the rest of us? Here, we've had a preoccupation with some of this for a long time, as if we're not loud about it and angry about it, then we're not serious about it. So the mob surges past us with their torches and pitchforks, some of us sat by the side of the road, shaking our head, wondering what in the world is going on. And here's one of those moments in masonry: what in the world is going on? We have we've inherited and we put our own embellishments on things Masonic. They mean different things in different locations, don't they? Well, in this location, I think having face-to-face contact with you is really important. Getting to know one another is important. And then once we have that sense where we can begin to open up a bit about our ideas, then we can communicate very easily through letters. If you never did that when you were younger, you wanted to stay in touch with a friend, you sent a letter. And then it showed that somebody took the time and concern to think that it was important enough to write down their ideas and send them to you, questions, and you know, that stumble. How much do I talk about my situation? Should I be asking lots of questions? I don't want to seem pushy. But it was a process, and it was charming, and it was always nice to see the signature, your friend or love or whatever it was. So today we put emphasis on certain things. And one of those things that Colin Dyer points out to us is the emphasis on the letter G. Oh, had to have a Masonic context here. So is it all right if I get into this a little bit about the G denoting God? Okay. The grand geometrician. But if reference is made to John Brown's master key, reflecting the practice of lodges under the modern Grand Lodge around 1800, we read it like this. I'll just give you a little piece of catechism and then a bit of Dyer's analysis, which I think has some significance. For why was you passed a philograft for the sake of the letter G? What does that letter G denote? Geometry, or the fifth science on which masonry is founded? What is geometry? Geometry is a science by which we are taught to find out the contents of bodies unmeasured by comparing them with those already measured. What are the four principles? Magnitude and extension, or a regular progression from a point to a line to a surface, and from that to a solid. What is a point? A small thing, the beginning of geometrical matter. What is a line? That point extended. What is a surface? Length and breadth without determined thickness. What is a solid? Length and breadth with a determined thickness and forms a cube. In this short catechism, it summed up a very great deal of the essential original symbolism of masonry, which our early forebears identified with geometry. First, it indicates a point going through a system of progressive degrees and shows that the second degree of our order is devoted to the study of geometry, the science related to measurement and so to building. The progression from a point is to a particular end, the foundation of a solid, not just any solid, but a cube. The cube is a body composed of six equal sides with all its angles right angles, a symbol of perfection. In its construction, the important step is the incorporation of a third dimension. As the old lectures say, raised from a superficial flat to a lively perpendicular. So when we get back again, we'll talk about an abbreviated story of the 3 degrees. You okay with that? Yeah, and it goes something like this. It is possible that the use of a letter in this way, it, as a representation of God, is a reflection of the influence of Jewish tradition in Masonic development. Jewish custom is not to pronounce the name of God, which was represented by the Tetragrammaton, but to use, I'll leave out some things here, but to use some other word. I'll leave that out instead. Or to find ways of expressing the presence of God by some other representation. The use of the letter G, especially when surrounded by a glory suggesting the Shekinah, an indication of light by the presence of God, may well have come into Masonry by copying a Jewish tradition. Well, entirely feasible. Thoughtful people. Yeah. Oh, I'm sitting here. When the program's over, I'm going to get back to my copy of Thomas More's Utopia. But I see the time, whatever that is winding down. There's so much more you should talk about. Very happy that you were here today. Very pleased. I hope you found this entertaining and worthwhile. I'll let you go with a little bit of a Canadian performer. I'm just feeling in that Canadian mood today. Thank you, Austria. Thank you, Russia, for tuning in. Thank you. It's a pleasure. And in the United States, to our true friends there. This is Oscar Peterson, CJAM Blues. See you soon. Thank you. Brown on bass and Oscar Peterson on piano. It's recorded in Denmark in 1964. Anyway, you can pull that up for yourselves, I hope, and listen to it in its entirety. It does have a certain pace. So does the Fraternal Order of Freemasonry. The Order of Freemasonry. We'll have to come to terms and talk. We'll talk more about women Freemasons and the progress of the ideas of principles and ethics. Anyway, and until we meet again, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. I'm told they're great for our health. Random Masonic kindness. I know you're out there. Talk to you again soon. Ciao.